from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. The Flaming Lips are headlining the 20th anniversary of San Francisco's influential Noise Pop Music Festival, and in this hour, we'll check in with Lips frontman Wayne Coyne. We'll also talk to one of the Noise Pop's co-founders and hear a live studio performance from legendary indie rocker Bob Mould, formerly of Husker Du and Sugar. That's all coming up on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Wayne Coyne is the lead singer, guitarist, and songwriter for the Oklahoma-based Flaming Lips. The critically acclaimed group first gained national attention with their 1993 hit, She Don't Use Jelly, and they're well known for their elaborate, memorable live shows. Wayne Coyne joins us in studio for this segment of the Forum program. I broke him up. How did I do that?
That was such a well-organized, almost like Super Bowl-ish intro there. It caught me off guard.
Well, I hope it makes you feel good. Glad to have you here. Welcome.
It's like triumphant return. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. Yeah.
Well, in fact, glad to have you back here. You're going to be part of Noise Pop, and you're going to be performing tonight, actually, over Bimbo's.
Yeah, yeah.
So all kinds of excitement, and all your thousands of Twitter followers know that you're here in studio with us. Let's talk about first thing people always want to know about is that space-age house compound of yours in Oklahoma. Before we even talk about music, I want to find out about it, because you're sort of right across the border from where the Branch Davidian craziness went.
Well,
right?
See, I when you're in San Francisco, Waco, Texas, and Oklahoma City probably seem kind of close. I like that. It's well, I wouldn't say we're actually very close, probably about 5 hours away, but there is always some connection to any long-haired sort of, you know, weirdo who has really, it's just a big house, but it ends up being called the compound. And then I get lumped in with the Branch Davidians, which I love, of course.
Actually, you probably get lumped in more. I'm thinking about Merle Haggard, Okie from Muskogee.
Oh, that too. Yeah. Yeah.
We don't wear our hair long in Muskogee and all that. And you wear your hair long.
Well, no, he has that famous song, "We Don't Smoke Marijuana in Muskogee." And they do for sure now. You know, we the mayor there is one of the youngest mayors ever elected in all of America. I think when he was elected, he was only 19 years old. Weird. Anyway.
When did you start in music? How old were you when you did She Don't Use Jelly?
Well, you know, I was talking in the green room with Bob Mould, and when you do music I was born in 1961, so I've been in the Flaming Lips since 1983, you know? And in the beginning of your life, you know, when you're in your 20s, you know, everything seems like a long time, but, we're talking about, we're going to be playing a record tonight that came out in 1999, started to record it in 1997. And, you know, to young people, this seems like, oh my God, this is old music. But it's not that old to me, because I was kind of old already when I made some of it. So in 1993, when we had this very first, you know, piece of fame and kind of being played on the radio and MTV and all that, back then MTV would play your videos. How old was I? I was already in my 30s, I suppose.
Well, speaking of your videos, when did you start doing the bunny and panda costumes and all that kind of stuff, which has made kind of its own element of fame?
We did a show in Oklahoma City, a pretty big show, you know, and we're always videotaping and all that sort of stuff whenever we do shows. And a friend of ours had taken some mushrooms and had, for some reason, had a rabbit suit. And he thought, I'm going to go to the Flaming Lips show on mushrooms dressed as a giant rabbit. After this show, people would come up to me, and say, I love this idea that you have people running around your shows in giant rabbit costumes. It was only one, but everybody must have seen this guy 100 times at night and assumed that there were 5 or 6.
Do you know about Harvey?
I've heard of Harvey, yeah.
I mean, giant rabbit, that's right. A theatrical production.
People talk about that. But I thought, well, this seems like a great, you know, thing that we should implement this and do it ourselves. So we immediately went out and bought some rabbit suits and some frog suits. And they're not as easy to find as you would think.
And harder to find a gummy skull, I think, isn't it?
Well, those you have to make yourself.
Yeah.
But we did this show. We were doing some shows with Beck. This is the very beginning of 2002. And we were in Hollywood rehearsing for a couple of weeks. And my wife went around to all of these sort of used costume houses around Hollywood and bought some of these great costumes that we still have even today. But it started really from just a friend of ours coming to the show, but everybody thinking, what a great thing. And then here we are.
Well, it has that psychedelic aura
does,
to
yeah.
it.
And then it's playful and it's ridiculous. And yeah.
In fact, I was reading an interview that you did and you said, we're all about birth and pleasure.
I would say, I mean, we you know, this record that we're doing tonight, the Soft Bulletin, speaking in the green room about, you know, a lot of people associate these songs with death. And almost every time that we play, someone will come up to me and talk about.
Wasn't Soft Bulletin done while your father was dying of cancer?
Well, my father died in 96, but we started to record this right at the end of 96, 97. So you could see where, you know, I never feel like I'm singing about anything, which is probably exactly how your life gets, you know, your music gets poisoned by your life, if your life is, you know, good, sad, boring, or whatever, you know. So I would say I didn't know that it was, but I think now, because this music sort of, you know, mysteriously, not through any of the, you know, not through the lyrics or anything, I don't think there's anything in it that you could scientifically say, oh, I can see why people are drawn to this, why this idea of death and comfort are in there. But I think that's probably why it was doing that for me.
You can be doing it again here in San Francisco.
Yeah. We are. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You talked about Beck, and there's been a lot of collaboration. You work with Nick Cave. You work with Yoko Ono.
Yeah, yeah.
And also want to work with Erykah Badu. Does that come across?
Well, I did. Just about 3 weeks ago, I have the connection I have to Erykah Badu is, again, I live in Oklahoma City. And she lives in Dallas, Texas, which is about 3 hours away. But she used to live in the same neighborhood where my wife's sister lived. And they would see each other strolling their babies around the neighborhood. So I knew she lived there. And then I'd been sort of tracking her down little by little. And there was a guy who runs a really cool studio down there where she goes in all the time. And I asked him, because he knows a couple of friends of mine, next time she's in, just to text me. And if I'm around, I'll stop by and say hello. Well, on my birthday, he texted me and said, hey, she's coming in tonight. And I texted him back and said, well, tell her it's my birthday. And she's wonderful. See, you don't know how people are going to be until you start texting and communicating with them. So she had texted me back, hey, Wayne, I heard it's your birthday. Happy birthday. Out of nowhere. I don't know her. And that's the first thing I get.
Belated so happy birthday,
well,
Wayne.
Well, thank you, Michael. And so she, you know, I tell her, well, hey, it's great to get a hold of you. I'd like to do some music with you. And then really within the next couple of days, we were doing something.
Oh, that's so exciting.
You know, yeah, you have to, and you have to be ready just to go with the flow. I think that's the greatest lesson I've learned from doing all these collaborations is let's just go and see what happens.
Well, you're a genial guy. I mean, that helps. We're talking to Wayne Coyne, if you just joined us, lead singer, guitarist, songwriter for the Flaming Lips. They'll perform their 1999 album, The Soft Bulletin, at Noise Pop later tonight at Bimbo's. And if you'd like to join us, and I know there are many Flaming Lips fans out there, if you have questions or comments for our guest, feel free to do it. It's a half-hour segment, so I would suggest you call now.
Oh,
our
excellent.
Toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. And as Wayne says, sometimes you have to communicate other ways, like by email forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. You can also go to our Facebook page. A number of ways to bring your questions or comments to the fore here, and you are certainly welcome to do that. Actually, speaking of Yoko Ono, I noticed you did some Beatles songs in a New Year's Eve concert. Huh?
We did. I mean, I think any group that's been, you know, around as long as we have, you know, you are always interested in the magic of this music that feels like it has just been part of your life and part of the universe forever. So we were playing in this New Year's Eve, two nights, New Year's Eve and the next night with Sean Lennon and Yoko. Of course, their group, you know, they've sort of reformed the, you know,
we
Yoko.
We had Sean on the program, in fact.
And he's wonderful. He is. I mean, we've played shows with him earlier in the year. But they, you know, they reformed the Yoko Ono, Plastic Ono band, and we had them play these shows with us. And so it was probably presumptuous and kind of embarrassing, but we thought, why don't we play these Beatles songs with everybody there together? And it wasn't really just Beatles songs. It was, to me, it was sort of these very classic Lennon songs, I'm the Walrus and Day in the Life, Strawberry Fields Forever, and She's So Heavy, the... And, you know, to me, to be able to sing that song with Yoko Ono standing on the side of the stage, I mean, you know, that's just a magic moment. I always say that's kind of like a Steven Spielberg moment. You know, if your life could come together and have this perfect thing happen. And so I thought,
how many of those moments have you had, do you think?
I've had a lot of them. It's good. But you have to make them happen. I mean, I think that's what we've learned. You know, it would. You know, if you're too cautious, you think, oh, that would just be – maybe that's too weird for Sean and Yoko to stand on the side of the stage while I'm singing a song that John probably never even sang it live. But we thought, what the heck? You know, maybe they would think it's wonderful. And they did. And so, you know, we took a chance. But, yeah, to be able to sing those songs and they're so great. I mean, we don't ever have any intention – especially with songs of that caliber, to interpret them. We just want to play them just like we remember them and to figure out all these little parts and the dynamics and why they sing this and why they sing that.
Scott Simon, who does Weekend Edition on NPR, just had Roberta Flack on. She did a whole album of nothing but Beatles songs.
Well, yeah.
Tribute, really. And that's what you were doing. You're a tribute, yeah?
Well, it's even more narcissistic and self-serving than that.
All right, I'm trying to give you.
It's like you just get to play these great songs that everybody already loves, and so you stand there as if, look at me, I'm John Lennon.
You
or
just
something.
Suck it up. Yeah.
So no, it's.
Did you do that with Pink Floyd too?
Well, we didn't do it on purpose, but I think you know, part of us is that we never feel as though. You know, we love this music, and this music has made us who we are. I don't think you could have grown up like I did in the 60s and 70s. And if you've, especially around my house, I had older brothers, older sister. They had friends. It was always about music and experiences and drugs and just intense things. And I was lucky enough to be young, and I got to be doing my art and music. And everyone around me was like, oh, this is so cool, you know. And so before I was even 13 or 14 years old, I think I was lucky enough to have everybody around me believe I should be in a band and I should do art. And here I am.
And here you are.
Yeah,
doing Beatles songs like not only I Am the Walrus, but A Day in the Life, Strawberry Fields. I imagine with all the psychedelic associations that you have that – Sgt. Pepper must have been a big influence.
Well, all those records were, you know. I mean, you know, it's easy to start there because all that, you know, especially when you're so interested in recording the way we are, you know, you try to pick apart all these little things and the way that the stereo field moves and all that. But really, to me, I could never pick a favorite Beatles thing just because, you know, growing up, when you're young, you don't think of albums. You know, you think of just, well, there's just songs. And especially with a group like the Beatles, it's just songs. And it doesn't really matter what album. And so I always have struggles, you know, picking what's my favorite. I don't know. What day is it? And so I would have a favorite song every other hour. It would be some other favorite song. But, you know, we live in a time where so much music is available. You know, you don't even have to hardly think about it. You can go out and find it. And
just have to go to your computer.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, you talked about all those things you talked about when you were growing up in Oklahoma, the music, the drugs, and so forth. Looking at an interview you did where you said, I wish I did believe in God. It would be a great relief to think God will take care of it. God will put gas in the car tomorrow. you've got kind of like me, you've got this spiritual envy, I guess.
Well,
envy people who have faith?
I think... Not part of me doesn't, because you know I love the challenge. I love the curiosity. I love, let's find out what's behind the curtain. You know, I think that's why I so you know, connect with this idea of being like the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, you've said that on a number of occasions.
Yeah.
You know, but he's a fraud, of course.
But he's on the side of flawed humanistic things. You know, he says, yeah, you know, the wizard's fake, and the, you know, the, and all this, you know, this is a charade that we're putting on. But the real things that he talks about, courage and, you know, and if only had a brain, you know, these things that he talks about, they're real humanistic things. And I think that's what I take to a Flaming Lips show, is I say, look, we all know this is lights and video screens and laser beams and all that. But the real reason this is going to have impact is because we're going to sing about these internal precious
things. You do
see
yourself as an artist above all, really, don't you?
Yeah, but not proudly. I mean, I understand the mechanism that drives me to want to do this art, and above everything else. And I'm not proud of that. I mean, I really do sometimes wish that there were just days when I didn't think, oh, I should be drawing or, you know, painting or making a, you know, song or thinking of some concept. You know, it's like it's just always there. And so, you know, everything I do is really just, you know, it's just a relief because I've got to do
something. Cathartic, almost.
Yeah.
Where did the name Flaming Lips come from?
Well, I'm not proud of that either. I'm glad. This is really kind of like therapy for me at this point.
They do
point.
Accuse me sometimes of having that role on the air.
But, you know, I think we were like most bands. We thought, well, we're so smart and so clever. We'll think of a really great name, but we just hadn't thought of it by time. See, our very first gig was set up.
And you had a contract?
It was just at the bar next door to where we rehearsed. Okay. Yeah. So we were getting ready to play, and we needed to make flyers and say, well, we're playing, and what are we called? Well, we didn't have a name. So we thought this Flaming Lips name will do for now, and then when we think of something much cooler, we'll just call ourselves that. And we played, and even though it wasn't very successful, enough people liked it, and we thought, well, okay. But I realized now that that's the only way that you can really get a name. Otherwise, you just think about it and think about it.
You compose that way too, don't you, some way?
Well, I hope...
I mean, you write about how you just kind of go along sometimes and you don't know where it's coming from, and then it comes and it's there.
Well, yeah. I think that's the truest way to do anything. I mean, I would say even some of our, what I think of as our best lyrics that we've come up with. There's the second song on the Soft Bulletin, and at the very end of these, all these lines, the song called A Spoonful Weighs a Ton, and there's all these things that rhyme with ton and gun and sun. And at the very end of the song, I do not know what I'm going to sing. We're doing the song, and we're recording vocals, but I do not know what I'm going to sing. And at the very end of the song, I sing, the sound they made was love. And you can hear this song now, and it sounds like I knew that lyric because it's so perfect and must have written the rest of the sort of, you know, uselessness of the song because of that. And I literally said it as I was doing the lyric to record it. And I didn't think it was
great.
It came
to you from God. That's what's talking again, if you've just joined us, with Wayne Coyne, lead singer, guitarist, and songwriter of Flaming Lips. And by the way, if you would like to talk with them, only about 5 minutes left with them, so get your calls in here. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, and let's go to the calls. Matt, hi, you're on.
Hi, it's a real joy to talk to you, and I love the show and everything, but it's really awesome to talk to Wayne. I got a chance to see you over in Oakland a couple of years back when you opened up with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and that was one of the most amazing visual spectacles I've ever seen in my life.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt. Thanks.
And I've also joyfully lost several hours of my life to Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robot. That album is fantastic as well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots actually was picked by Rolling Stone as the number 27 of 100 best albums of the year.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I know. Depending on, you know, what their mood is on that particular week. Yeah, you can.
That's something to be
proud of. It can sound impressive.
See, just like me. You take the praise and you turn it into a...
Well, no.
A humble negative
statement.
It is.
Yeah.
Let me get another caller on here. Rob is next. Hi, Rob. You're on.
Hey, Michael. Big fan. Wayne, I'm a huge fan as well.
Well, thank you.
This is funny. I just wanted to make a little confession. I was slow to the music scene in high school. I didn't really blossom for a while. I confessed to reaching you through Coldplay, and which is kind of embarrassing. But
in what way? What do you mean? And how would that happen?
Well, let me give you the lineage. it went from Coldplay, and then eventually I got a little smarter, and then I caught on to OK Computer, and that made me go, you know, started blossoming a little bit more, and then someone tipped me off to the soft bulletin, and that was the end of that. And from there, I went to Clouds Taste Metallic, and then you came out with Yoshini, and oh boy, I mean, it's just been nothing but fun since then.
Wow.
I saw you at the Greek, and
well, thank you. Yeah. I like how there's an ascension up from Coldplay to Radiohead to the Flaming Lips, as if this is all you ever needed to know. Well, thank you for that. It's a great compliment.
Yeah, and thank you for you turn that into even a better compliment. Ascension up, I like that. Thank you for the call, Rob. Here's Paul from the Sippy Cups, who says, Wayne, you're too big for bimbos. We can never get in. When will you play Outside Lands? Also, any kids' records on the horizon?
The second question first. I think all of our music is appropriate for kids, mostly because if they have cool parents that love music, kids love nothing more than to be around adults who are having fun and enjoying life.
You
and
guys
so,
are like the Rolling Stones. You're transgenerational, really.
I believe that. Yeah. I mean, I think
like
all
the Grateful Dead even more than the Rolling Stones.
I mean, so most of our music, I think, you know, can appeal to kids. Mostly because kids have cool parents. And the reason that we're playing bimbos is because it's part of the noise pop thing. And so we like to do different things. Playing big shows is a big responsibility. There's always lots of money involved, big tickets and all that. And I understand playing someplace like bimbos that perhaps the tickets will sell out quickly. But to me, that's not the end of the world. You know, we will play other shows. This is a special show. And if you're not allowed to get in... that's okay. We'll play other shows,
it's
and you'll get into
those.
Better
than that bar you played in that first gig, right?
No. I mean, I say this all the time about San Francisco. San Francisco is one of the very first places that allowed us to play. You know, we lived in Oklahoma City and we wanted to play there, but no one let us play there. I guess we were just too weird, you know. And we made this very first record, and the woman that ran the I-Beam, is the I-Beam still a venue here? It was one of the very first places we played. We opened up for a band called Green on Red at the I-Beam, and it was one of our greatest shows ever. People couldn't believe that we were able to go to San Francisco and play. So it's and for the longest time, I still run into people now, but for the longest time, people thought we were from San Francisco.
Well,
I kind of wish we were.
You could pass.
Yeah, yeah.
let's get Tammy on here while we have just a minute. Quickly, Tammy, if you could.
Oh, I just wanted to say that the interview is very, very enlightening, and I was kind of the reverse. I was turned on to your music through my daughter's friend, got to see you with them at a New Year's show in San Francisco, and the total experience is just wonderful. Your music, like you say, is cross-generational. It's a lot of fun. It's the show itself is entertaining. And I just really appreciate your work.
And
well,
Tammy,
thank you,
if you haven't seen Christmas on Mars, make sure you do. Because Wayne Quine says, we're a movie you can talk to. Listen, it's been good to have you here.
Well, thank you, sir. It goes too fast. Come on, let's do another half hour. Come on.
Appreciate your being here. You'll have to come back. That's what we're
excellent.
Doing.
All right, well, thanks for having me.
Wayne Quine, Flaming Lips. I'm Michael Krasny.
Yelling as hard as they can. The doubters all were stunned. Heard louder than a gun. The sound they made was love, 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 love.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Welcome back to the program. We're joined in this segment by another noise pop headliner, Bob Mould. But before we meet Bob Mould, we want to talk to Jordan Corlin, who's here with us in studio, who's actually the big cheese of noise pop, or one of them. And Jordan, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I want to find out about this year's noise pop and what do you got planned? I mean, we've heard some of it. Flaming Lips, we got Bob Mould. And they're the headliners, but who else?
Well, we have over 100 acts this year, and it's a really nice balance between, you know, a number of artists that have headlined the festival over the years. Bob, Flaming Lips, of course, as you just mentioned, but also Arches of Loaf, local band, the Dodos are playing, and a number of new up-and-coming acts. We're really excited about Grimes and Bleach.
Some group called Built to Spill, which you tried 14 times to get.
Built to Spill. It became a joke. I would call their agent every year to try to book them, and it somehow stuck this year.
So this is a big deal. This is 20 years, too, right?
It is. It's 20 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you got Sleigh Bells. And
yeah, Sleigh Bells coming off their Saturday Night Live performance on Saturday, which is a really nice warm-up for our festival.
All kinds of action. Yeah. Congratulations, in fact, on putting this on again. I know that people who love independent music are really in ecstasy over this, and it gets bigger every year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we, you know, Kevin and I, every year it ends and we have a great time and we look at each other and like, okay, are we really going to do this again? But the Bay Area music community is just so supportive and enthusiastic about the festival. We have to keep going.
Well, keep going for the sake of keeping independent music alive and for the sake of all these wonderful anecdotes that come out. I was looking at your website, 2006 anecdotes. Gavin Newsom sent an emissary who was wasted. 2007, David Cross got up and started making fun of the sponsors. And in 2011, Dan Deacon asked for new underwear.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's never a dull moment, really. And, you know, sometimes I feel so fortunate to have been involved in this festival and also feel so fortunate to be able to work around music. I mean, really, since I was in college. And you have these life experiences that start feeling so normal, and then you look back, you know, you take something like the 20th anniversary of festival and you look back and you realize, wow, that's not normal, and it's pretty special to be able to do this type of thing every day.
So if people want more information on Noise Pop, they can go to your website?
Absolutely.
Give it out?
www.noisepop.com.
And again, Jordan Kerlin is co-owner and producer of Noise Pop and owner of Zeitgeist Artist Management. Here with us in studio, and also here with us in studio, is Bob Mould, former frontman of the post-punk 80s group Husker Du, as well as the pop band Sugar. And Bob Mould plays the Sugar album Copper Blue on Friday, February 24th, at the Bottom of the Hill. He also has a new memoir out, which we'll talk about, See a Little Light, The Trail of Rage and Melody. And he's got a guitar.
I do.
Welcome.
Good morning, Michael. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Traffic
good
not
to have
so
you
bad
back.
This morning. So.
Yeah, well, it's the day after President's Day, and they have something to do with it. Or maybe they knew Bob Mould was in town.
No, I'm in town all the time now. Actually, I've lived here for almost 3 years.
I know you
so
have.
It's been,
in fact, there's a great picture in your book with Jello Biafra
and John Lennon.
And John Lennon. I mean, there are all these San Francisco connections. You say San Francisco is really, along with Amsterdam and Berlin, your favorite city.
Yeah, love it a lot. I mean, there's a lot of things here that I love. You know, the climate, obviously, is I don't mind the fog, and I don't think anybody should ever complain about it getting to 50 degrees after spending most of my life in snow country. I like the culture here quite a bit. It's a very progressive city. It's people have been really welcoming to me since.
And
I've
you
been
like
there,
to so. Watch the people.
I'm a people watcher. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a good town for that.
30 years in the music business now. They got only 20 years. Noise Pop. You got the decade on
33 now.
33. Whoa.
Don't remind me.
Well, I'm sorry. I guess I did remind you, but you're going to play something for us. Yeah?
Should I
get some live music in the studio?
Let me clear up my voice here. I just actually got back. I was doing some. Doing some shows up in Seattle and Portland this weekend, so I always bring back a little bit extra
well, welcome
chest
home.
Congestion from there. So, but like you were saying, doing Copper Blue in its entirety on Friday night at Bottom of the Hill. And
why that album?
What's that? Why that album? Yeah. I like that album, and it came out 20 years ago. And Jordan didn't tell me that it was 20th anniversary of Noise Pop. This is my fourth time doing Noise Pop, so. All the stars lined up, so it worked out well. But the song I would like to do is probably the most well-known song maybe off the album. It was the fourth single, actually, in the UK off the record, and it's called If I Can't Change Your Mind. So let me make sure I'm... That's close enough, right? Okay. Tears fill up my eyes and washed away with sorrow. Somewhere in my mind, no, there's no tomorrow. I see you leaving soon, I guess you've had your fill. I can't change your mind and no one will.
if I can't change your mind now. And all throughout the years, never strayed from you, my dear. You suspect I'm somewhere else, feeling sorry for yourself, leaving with a broken heart. Love you even still, but if I can't change your mind, then no one will. If I can't change your mind, well, even though my heart keeps breaking, don't you know that I'll be waiting here for you. And then when you return now, when will you return now? Hope you see I'm dedicated. Look how long that I have waited. You come back, you will find a different person if you change your mind. If I can't change your mind, yeah. Oh, and how can I explain away something that I haven't done? If you can't trust me now, never trust in anyone. With all the crazy doubts you've got, I love you even still, yeah. If I can't change your mind, then no one will know. Ooh, if I can't change your mind, yeah. No, no. Well, someday you'll see I've been true. I'll stay that way until. But if I can't change your mind, then no one will know. If I can change your mind, yeah. If I can change your mind, ooh, no, no. If I can change your mind, oh, no, no, no. If I can change your mind.
Wow, that was quiet.
Yeah, bravo.
That was so quiet.
Yeah. And your eyes were closed the whole time.
Yeah, I was trying to remember what I was doing. I've never played it that quiet before in my life.
Well, thank you for playing it.
Can
here.
I use that version for
live
later?
In the studio? Yeah, okay, I suppose. Cool. Actually, I heard the first time I heard that song, I really liked it a lot.
Right,
I want
thank
you to know
you.
That. And there's a lot of really craft-like guitar playing that goes on too, with your fingers moving and doing your own accompaniment there, which I think blends in beautifully with the song, and it has kind of a lament quality to it. Almost.
It does. It's interesting. I mean, clearly on Friday at Bottom of the Hill, when it's 125 decibels and everybody's running for cover, it'll sound a little rougher. But yeah, it's a very plaintive song. You know, very just sort of like exactly like the words say. You know, do you believe me now? Kind of.
And yet, I was reading your memoir, and I'm thinking, man, the guy's got a lot of rage in him, too.
Of course. Of course.
Rage against what? Rage against the machine? Rage against Mario Savio? No.
No, it's just I touch on my childhood in the book. Well, I more than touch on it. I sort of rip it open and show it to people. You know, I had a sort of a rough childhood. I mean, a sort of a chaotic home life, and the one thing that was soothing to me as a child was music. It was my escape, and it is right now, and it will be for years to come. And you know, I think a lot of that noise is maybe early on was just to drown out everything that was happening around me, things that were happening in my own head. You know, it's music's a very visceral thing. It's a very therapeutic thing. It's a very mysterious thing at times. But,
and yet writing music, you say, can be terribly taxing. Excuse me, not writing music, but writing a memoir could be.
Writing a memoir
was terribly taxing.
Taxing.
And you say ripped you open. I mean, it suggests that there was really a great deal of emotionality that went into the whole writing process. Why did you feel the need to make sense of your life, as you put it?
I had gotten approached about doing this back in 2001. My collaborator on the book, Michael Azrad, had just written a book called Our Band Could Be Your Life that was published by Little Brown. And Michael Peach was his editor at the time at Little Brown. So I went and had a meeting with them in 01. And they were like, you want to do a memoir? I'm like, that's a little soon, you know, because I knew, you know, I knew some of the darkest stories were yet to come. So held off on that till about 07. And then actually it was here in town. I was doing a City Arts and Lecture with Michael Azarad as the Q part of the Q&A. And we had a very heated conversation, and that made me think about revisiting the offer. And we started working in 08, and we spent about 3 years, Azarad and I, back and forth working on it. I would write a lot of stories, send them to him. He'd try to thread them together, you know, sort of, we did it chronologically. And, that 3 years of going back and forth on that, he helped me see a lot of the threads that I had ignored because I was actually living them as opposed to observing them.
It's a whole different feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. I think everybody should give it a try. I don't know if everybody should go all the way through with it. But
it's amazing what comes out. I think because I wrote a memoir years ago, but I remember having Paul Auster on, and he said the difference between writing a memoir and, say, writing fiction is – when you write fiction, and I imagine the same is true about writing music, you're almost in an altered state of consciousness.
Yes.
Whereas you're writing a memoir, it's like you've gone into a desk drawer and you forgot about all the things that were in there.
Oh,
and you find things that you didn't even know or didn't even realize were in there.
Yeah, it's that thing where, it's you have all the things that you like to remember, and then there's all the things that you'd rather forget, and those are the reminders, right? So.
And Bob Mould's memoir, by the way, is called, the new memoir, See a Little Light, The Trail of Rage and Melody. And while we have him in the studio, it's an opportunity for you, by the way, to join us with any questions or comments you might have. If you're a Bob Mould fan, or even if you just want to talk about the composition of music or talk to him about his life, whatever's on your mind, our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your call, so feel free to join us now at 866-733-6786. He'll be one of the headliners at Noise Pop. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or go to our Facebook page. We certainly welcome your involvement in the program. And there's you got tinnitus, don't you?
I've had a hodgepodge of hearing things go on. I mean, my hearing, all told, is really, really good. But, I have the bad ringing after shows. And then now on my left side, I've started to get this sort of foghorn sound.
It's a hazard of the profession.
Yeah. I figure with all the advances in medicine, by the time I'm really in trouble, they'll have something. They could just go in and sort of make a little notch, let a little space out, and pop something in. So
you're an optimist. I have diabetes. I feel the same way. That's optimism.
We're hopeful. Yeah.
Yeah. talk about what happened in Palm Springs. That was a kind of fascinating story.
Well, what we're talking about here is the preface of the book. And again, the publishers were like, you got to lead with a big, strong punch to get people, because people go to the store, they read the flap, then they, I'll try the preface, see if there's anything good. So the story that we're talking about is it's Palm Springs, California, and there's an annual music festival called the Coachella Music Festival. And I go every year. My partner Michael and I went with some we'd gone year after year, and sometimes we'd gone with friends and had these hilarious things happen. But this year I was going to play the festival. I believe it was 09, and we were staying at a clothing optional resort. And so bringing up the tinnitus, I sleep with the television on, and at this clothing optional resort, there was two televisions in our suite. Oh boy. And they had programmed these codes into the remote controls, I guess, to keep you from stealing either the remotes or the TVs. But, so we couldn't get it to work. We kept going to the front desk to ask for help. And the third time my partner went to ask, he was confronted by the owner, who was clearly out of his mind. And, my partner said something about this was a real hassle, and the guy thought he called him an a-hole. So he came back and threw us out of the room, and this is about 5 hours before I'm supposed to be on stage at Coachella. And we had a very heated conversation, and, I'm calling up my credit card company, canceling charges, and he's threatening to call the police. And I'm thinking, of all things to be thrown out of a place for complaining about the remote.
What you write about it as the walk of shame, in fact.
The walk of shame, yes. Well, I'm sure there's people here in San Francisco who can identify with that. I see them a lot on going to brunch on Sunday. But anyhow, that's another conversation.
Well, here's someone who writes on the web. It's a real treat hearing Bob Mould playing live on Forum today. I'd love to hear Bob talk a bit more about what drove him to settle in San Francisco and to talk about the music community here as a whole. What, from his point of view, is unique about it that other cities across the U.S. or the world don't have?
Well, I guess to address that first, an incredibly rich history. I mean, you know, I mean, a lot of people outside of San Francisco obviously think about the psychedelic era first off, with Haight-Ashbury and Janis and the Dead and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that, you know, I mean, that really set the stage. You know, for me, my entry point was the early 80s. My first band, Husker Du, we spent a lot of time out here in the summer of 81.
Could you tell me where that name comes from, by the way?
Husker Du was a children's board game. That was put out in the 60s. It's Scandinavian for Do You Remember? And the game is sort of like a concentration kind of game where you lift up two tiles, and if the objects underneath match, you keep the tiles and keep going. But
is it your Minnesota roots? Or?
Yeah, that, and also picking a name that didn't have the in front of it, because that was sort of the rage at the time. So we wanted something that was a little more mysterious and might survive the current wave. But
So back to San Francisco.
Yeah, summer 81, a lot of time Jello Biafra was hosted the band and, you know, was very gracious with his time and with his place over by Dolores Park. And I started to get a connection then. You know, I guess zipping up to the current, you know, there's, you know, not only with, you know, Noise Pop and Treasure Island and other festivals that go on here, you know, there's a lot of the tech companies are so involved in music here. And as far as bands, you know, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of new psych bands, you know, like Fresh and Olney's, a lot of great stuff that, you know, the OCs, you know, bands like that, that, you know, are sort of keeping, you know, sort of updating the, you know, what people think of with San Francisco music.
Keeping it alive.
Yeah. So it's great. I mean, there's a lot, you know, there's so many great venues here, you know, so many great promoters of music, supporters of music, you know, it's, there's a lot going on here, and I wish sometimes that, you know, that there was, you know, this, you know, a lot more cooperation, you know, from the different people, because it could easily surpass what they do in Austin, Texas.
What kind of cooperation?
You know, just recognizing that, you know, the tech sector is the new music business, you know, in digital distribution and streaming and, you know, what YouTube, Google, what, you know, Apple, what a lot of people are doing here. I mean, there's a lot more going on here than there is in New York or L.A. at the moment as far as advancing the music business. So it'd just be great if there was a way to get everybody together and really push this thing like Austin did with South by Southwest.
Actually, got a caller, Randy, who is at your show you did in Dallas and wanted to comment on it. Randy, go ahead.
Hey, thanks a lot. Bob, I'm a longtime fan. I love Husker Du, but I really freaking love your solo stuff.
Thanks, Randy.
And I saw you about 20 years ago in Texas, the club like called Trees, with my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife. We were both at the show. We were right up front. You were doing an acoustic set at Trees, and Trees has this big sliding garage door that opens onto the street. So you had sat down to do your set, and it started raining, and the guys at Trees opened up the back door so we could get some air in the club. I don't know. But it was thunder and lightning, and you were sitting down in this chair, and you were playing. And my wife and I had a religious experience. So we just wanted to thank you for that, man.
Thanks for mentioning that show. That is a hard one to forget. I actually mentioned it in the book, two things about that. I think the night before there was this little punk rock outfit called Nirvana had played the club. And I think Kurt Cobain had put his guitar through the monitor desk. So they were short a little bit of gear when I got there. And the storm, I remember, they opened up. So behind me, you're seeing this Texas storm unfolding, you know, and Black Sheets of Rain was the album that I had just put out. So, the whole thing ties together real nice. I remember the show well, and congratulations on decades of a happy marriage.
Yeah, and thank you for the call. We're going to lean on you, Bob, to maybe play something else. Before you do, what do you think about the future of the music industry, how things are going to shake out, and what the economic model is going to be?
The model's very different. I mean, I think as with any business, distribution is key, and I think advertising and marketing is right behind that. So, you know, again, when I mentioned some of the tech companies, there's our distribution, you know, currently and in the future. I'm pretty hopeful for the business right now because we've just gone through a decade plus of, I think charlatans would be a strong word, but I think,
or maybe not strong enough.
I think there's been a lot of technology applied to music that has conned people into thinking that music is supposed to be a certain way. You know, my buddy Dave Grohl touched on it when he spoke at the Grammys. You know that mistakes are good. You know, humanity is good. That's what makes music what it is. So you know, I see a model where, if you have a great song, you know, you can get it out to the whole world very quickly. People will hear that song and go, I want to hear more. If you got three good songs, then people start telling their friends, hey, this guy's got three good songs. And then all of a sudden, you can go to a town and you can play a show. And people will show up. And here's the tipping point. And this is where it gets back to what makes music so special. Is if you go up on that stage and you don't have that humanity and you can't deliver your message and make people believe, they're not going to come back. And they're going to find somebody else on the internet that's got one or three good songs. So, you know, it's going to come back to the craft, the gathering of people in a situation, and then you have to stand up and you have to deliver. And if you can't do that, you're going to go away a lot faster than you used to. So, you know, there's an acceleration of exposure and, you know, I mean, you really got to be able to perform these days. So it's nice that it's coming back to the craft and back to live music. And you know, with Noise Pop, I mean, this is a great example of people who can play, you know, both new and old bands.
And you're going to perform some more live music for us? What are you going to play?
Okay. Well, I tried to get Wayne to stick around, but I think he had some stuff going on. So I'm going to play the song that I wanted him to sing with me on. We'll get around to that someday, but this is an old, old song.
Wayne wanted to stick around. He just didn't feel comfortable enough, I think, to sing the song. He didn't.
Oh, yeah. He should. Well, if he's here, he can come back in. But, as you can hear, I'm starting to get late morning voice already. So I'm going to pick something in a low register. This is an old Husker Du song. This is the one I usually close my solo solo acoustic shows with. And it's called Makes No Sense At All. Let me give me one more. Where's the cough button here? All right. Here we go. Walking around with your head in the clouds, it makes no sense at all. You sell yourself short, but you're walking so tall, it makes no sense at all. Is it important you're yelling so loud? It makes no sense at all. You're walking around with your head in the clouds, it makes no sense at all. It makes no difference at all. Yeah, it makes no sense at all. It makes no difference at all. Well, I don't know why you wanna tell me when I'm right or when I'm wrong. It's the same thing in your mind. The only time I'm right is when I play along. When I play along, yeah. You're walking around with your head in the clouds, makes no sense at all. You sell yourself short, but you're walking so tall, it makes no sense at all. Is it important you're yelling so loud, it makes no sense at all. You're walking around with your head in the clouds now. It makes no difference at all. Yeah, it makes no sense at all. It makes no difference at all, no. Well, you concern yourself with evidence, it's evident to me. Well, you say you've got the tiger by the tail. Well, I don't see these things that way. See these things that way now. Yo, walking around with your head in the clouds, it makes no sense at all. You sell yourself short, but you're walking so tall, it makes no sense at all. Is it important you're yelling so loud, it makes no sense at all. You're walking around with your head in the clouds, it makes no sense at all. It makes no difference at all.
yeah, it makes no sense at all. It makes no difference at all. Walking around with your head in the clouds, it makes no sense at all.
Where did that song come from? What was the genesis of it?
Where did that song come from? I don't know. I probably wrote that in a with a hangover in an alley somewhere in Reno, Nevada. I don't know.
Well, you have so many refrains. I mean, what is it internally that tells you it needs another refrain or doesn't need another refrain?
You know, it's funny. I was on a message board reading about my work the other day, because I'm like that sometimes. And somebody said the greatest, gave me the greatest compliment, you know, just like a, you know, civilian who knows nothing. He goes, man, that dude is the master of the outro. You know, he knows how to finish a song. And I was like, I'm glad somebody noticed that.
High praise.
Yeah, it's good. You know, you start with a melody, you sort of bring it back at the end, you put the title over the top, you have another voice sort of countering it with a different message, and you just do that thing, you make that swirl, you know, it's magic.
Bob Mould, continue your magic. Thank you so much for being with us. Bob Mould's former frontman of the post-punk 80s group Husker Du, as well as the pop band Sugar, and he'll play the Sugar album Copper Blue Friday, February 24th at the Bottom of the Hill, all part of Noise Pop. His new memoir is See a Little Light, The Trail of Rage and Melody. I want to thank Bob Mould, Wayne Coyne, Jordan Kurland. Again, you can find out more about Noise Pop simply by going to our website, noisepop.com. And thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We're with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. You can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. We're hearing more of Bob Mould as we go out here. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.